This episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club is brought to you by our Patreon members of the Trophy Talk Network. Thank you to all of our wonderful supporters. It really means a lot to us. So a special thank you shout out to Pat the Trophy Hunter, Against Me, KingK6969, Toxic, Diego Juan, First Mage, Gary Cooper, and Jordan Vickers. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/trophytalknetwork to learn more. And now, enjoy the show. What's up, Internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I'm your host, Kevin Garaventa, a.k.a. the Portland Kevin, and this is a show where we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus library and break it down for your entertainment, information, and amusement. Today is a very special day because we are talking about the award-winning pixel platformer Celeste, developed and published by Maddie Makes Games in January of 2018. In it, you play as Madeline, who has traveled to the Mountain of Celeste, intending to climb it as a challenge to herself. But the mountain holds a few secrets that bring out some unexpected things in herself and the people she meets on her journey. Her story integrates themes of self-reflection, forgiveness, and acceptance, which garnered massive attention when the game released. And besides that, the gameplay itself is deserving of the awards way back in 2018. So I'm very excited to talk about it. And joining me for this conversation and this trek up Celeste are two very special guests, David Ochart. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. I put out on our Discord channel, like, this, has anyone played Celeste and does it really have a special meaning to them? And you're one of the people that reached out. So I'm really excited to talk about it. But we also have Griffin Tennell. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How you doing? How is Florida?
It's good. I am down here. It is warm here compared to what I am previously used to. But Celeste is literally one of my favorite games ever. I'm so happy to be here to talk about it.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, it is something extremely special. So I've been wanting to talk about it for a while, and I wanted to find the right people to talk about it. So I'm really excited. But before we talk about Celeste, I do want to give a chance for you guys to talk about your own projects. So first of all, Griffin, I've heard about D+S a couple of times from you and listened to a couple episodes. Why don't you give everyone an idea of what it is?
Yeah, D+S is a YouTube channel that I run dedicated to all things Disney. Particularly, we do a lot of episodes about content on Disney Plus. We're currently doing we have weekly shows where we talk about shows coming live to Disney Plus. We've done shows like The Mandalorian. We are doing Daredevil. We've done actual Disney shows like Behind the Attraction. We'd really try to hit the gambit on anything and everything Disney. We talk about movies, TV shows, theme parks. And even more recently, we did a video essay all about a old game in the theme parks where we recreated it physically in my old apartment and tested it to find the kinks and stuff. So we'd really hit anything and everything Disney. If Disney is something you're interested in, I highly recommend giving the YouTube channel a look.
Yeah, that video was really cool to see because it kind of inspired me to also like start working on a few game projects that I have of my own. But also, David, you are part of an improv group called The Mondays. Can you give us some details about that?
Yeah, so we are The Mondays. It's a group I've been with for a couple of years, and we perform in and around the Portland area. And I don't know, it's a lot of fun. If you like sort of crazy off the wall comedy, mostly about like goblins and or religious trauma, check us out.
That sounds very interesting. Okay. pretty cool. Do you guys perform on Mondays only, or?
No, actually, I don't think we've ever performed on a Monday. but we all met in class, and it was Mondays every week for like almost, I think, over a year. Actually, we went through several levels together, and class always ended up being on the Monday. So that just kind of became our group name.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, if you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more like it, please like and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening. It really helps us show up in more recommended feeds and algorithms. And if you want to be part of an episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club, you can send in an email at psplusgameclub@gmail.com or find our Discord channel to write and talk about it there. The PlayStation Plus Game Club is also part of the Trophy Talk Network, and the Discord has a larger community as well as connections to other shows like the Trophy Talk Podcast, the MoogleCast, and Surviving the Horror. The Trophy Talk Network also has a Patreon that we are a part of, and you can go over there and join us there for a few extra perks like writing into the show, voting on what games we play for Game Club, and a few other things. So, with that small bit of housekeeping out of the way, though, I'd like to start talking about Celeste. Part of it, though, I do want to do some platinum shout outs from the Discord just to thank anyone who has played with us as like a shout out. So Fate Prime wrote in with the screenshot of their platinum, saying, "This was my trophy hunt of the year for 2024. The music and level design is just so good, and I definitely recommend people try an unassisted playthrough for a decent challenge." So thank you, Fate Prime, for playing along with us. And yes, I definitely want to talk about the assist mode that is there for anyone to use and how good this trophy list is and the music. Like, everything about this game is so good. So you can tell my coffee is kicking in because I'm rambling on and on and on. But this game is fantastic, and I really want to thank you for playing with us. And if you're listening and, you know, you want to throw in your own platinum shot for playing our monthly game, it doesn't have to be the trophy doesn't have to be earned during the month that we're talking about it. You know, Fate platinumed it last year. So you can send in those plat shots whenever you've platinumed a game and from whenever it was. So hope you enjoyed the game, Fate. Yeah, you guys, I'm excited to have you here and talk about it. So, let's actually dive into it. Celeste itself is, it's not the name of the character. So, you know, there's a misnomer there for anyone just casually talking about it that doesn't know what it is. It's like Zelda. Like, you don't play as Zelda, in the Zelda series, you play as Link, but, Celeste is the mountain, and Madeline, our main character, has come to Celeste to climb it, and is wanting to do this as sort of like a challenge to herself. That's like the basic premise of the game. Celeste is about climbing this mountain, and you're helping Madeline get up there. It's a side-scrolling platformer that's pixelated, so, you know, it looks very old school, like it was on Super Nintendo, or at least like that's the graphical style. Like, it looks very 16-bit, what that was the thing that really struck me at first when I first saw a trailer years ago. What was it like? What was your first impression of this game when you first heard about it?
I feel like it really, I think it presents right up front as like, what if Super Meat Boy wanted to make you cry, but not just out of frustration? Like it's, it's, but it's very much that style of like, really, I mean, not punishing, but very demanding precision platforming. And you know, I love the way that each new level introduces some interesting new gameplay mechanic, and really like sticks with it for one level and then sort of moves on to the next thing. I don't know, it just adds so much variety to the whole playthrough.
It really does. And every one of those new elements is unique to that level. Like, they don't repeat elements in later levels until the very last one. And that's when they bring everything together for you to like incorporate all these different elements into one stage. And that's like kind of the basic best way to design platformers, I feel like, where you have one element introduced every single stage. And that way it helps the player like build their skills as they're going. Griffin, like what did you think about this game when you first saw it?
I mean, when I first heard about this one, it was, oh, the Towerfall Ascension devs are making a single player game. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Towerfall is amazing. And then I played this and I was like, oh, I'm just going to be crying for 12 hours. And then this game is going to become my entire personality. I really do think this is a perfect platformer, where it is like you have your core movement, your core platforming abilities with the run, jump, grabbing, and holding to walls, and then the dash. The dash being one of my favorite mechanics you can put in a 2D platformer. Yeah. And then, the way it plays into some of the other stuff, like you mentioned, like every level having its own gimmick, essentially. And then they fully play with those gimmicks to as far as they possibly can between like the actual level itself, where they all come back in the summit, but then also between the A sides, B sides, and C sides. They really are, let's take this mechanic and throw every possible thing we can at that mechanic, and the harder stuff we will separate out into a harder level. But it's, none of it ever feels unfair, which is so impressive to me. Like, this game is hard as nails, and every single time I am dying, I am blaming myself, not the game.
Exactly. And I feel like that kind of difficulty is something that is very hard for games to implement well and make it feel like it's still a possible achievement for you to get through, even if you don't feel like you're great at the game. And this one, I think like what it does really well is that it's very forgiving in terms of how difficult it can be, where if you fall down a pit or you hit some spikes, and you have to go back to where you started, but that starting point is only a few seconds away and it doesn't take long to reload. So that kind of, you know, like failure and then attempt again is seamless, and it never really like forces you to wait. It doesn't punish you. It just stops you and forces you to just keep trying over and over. And it's really snappy. It's really fast, just like Super Meat Boy. But the fact that it doesn't force you to repeat things over and over that you've already finished, like it doesn't send you all the way back to the beginning of a level. Its checkpoints are very forgiving. So, you know, if you die, you've only got to make a few moves to get back to where you were. And then, you know, your progress continues. So it kind of relates to the theme of mental health, they're recovering from depression or dealing with something where you have some insurmountable feat that you want to try and accomplish, but really your progress is best made with very little steps and incremental things that add up over time. And you know, we'll get into like what themes that really covers, but just as kind of a gameplay mechanic, like it really works with the fact that it is a hard game, but it's really forgiving in its checkpoints, so it doesn't feel as hard moment to moment. Like I would spend 5 to 10 minutes on a single screen, and then finally when I made it, I'd be like, okay, yes, I can do this. And the game starts by showing you on screen just a simple message: you can do this. And it's a powerful thing to start a game like that with that kind of message and then present you with something that feels really hard, because it kind of gives you that small affirmation to tell you like, oh no, this is possible. You got this. And that's something that's like very beautiful in its theming.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that, like, it doesn't grade you at the end of a stage or at the end of a chapter. Like, I think some games that do have challenges, like you'll get to the end of a level and you'll feel like good about getting through something difficult. And then it's like, well, you got a C, hun. So like you didn't do that well. And this game, you know, if you're achievement hunting, then you do have to sort of like worry about the number of lives you use or whatever. But if you're just kind of playing through at your own pace, you can, let's say, put like 113 lives into a single screen, and that's okay. Yeah. They're not going to like, you know, punish you for it.
That was a very specific number. That sounds like experience.
Oh, no, not at all. Let's say.
I will say to their credit, though, they also track all of that and let you see that if you search it out. In that main menu, there is the progress book, which I really love that as someone who is trying to collect everything in it. I am going for the platinum trophy in this game, and it's something that I kind of just pick at every once in a while. Like, I've collected all of the strawberries. I'm working my way. I have like 2 more B-sides left, and then I'm moving on to all of the hearts and doing farewell. And it is genuinely so helpful because it gives you like deaths, but then it's also death in the A-side versus the B-side. And then there's also total amount of time you've spent on each of the, I guess, 9 total levels. They really give you all of that information as well.
Yeah,
they really give you everything you need to be successful at this game and just say, go, do it. You will learn how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like it tells you like this is possible. You just have to be persistent and you have to keep trying. And I really love how it teaches you things as well. And like David, you said it is like a perfect platformer. It really is, where they've engineered things incredibly well. And they teach you this even in the first level, where you're running through this, like the ruins of a city, and there's like ledges that you have to jump off of. And then as Madeline, the basic mechanic is that she's trying to climb this mountain. So you can do a few things and that's it. That's all you can do in the game. But you can run, you can jump, you can grip on the side of ledges for a limited amount of time. And then she has a special ability where she can dash through the air. And that, in a sense, sort of adds like a second jump, like a midair jump. But this dash can go in any direction. And you have to somehow find your way through these platforming levels and then reach the next screen. That's the main goal. But there's like underlying physics that you don't necessarily see right away that you will probably encounter in the first level.
There's a lot of little things to that controller that are so crazy. Like while you're falling, if you hold down, you fall faster.
Yeah.
Same if you hold up, you fall a little bit slower. Or yeah. when they introduce, like, when Madeline and Madeline, merge, and you have two dashes.
Yeah.
Or when they send you to the core, if you've played that level, you don't just get your dashes back every time you hit the ground. Like, they find the ways, even in that core set of moves, to play with it and keep it fresh throughout the entire game.
Yeah, and there's like other considerations that you can learn about, or other factors you learn about. Like, there's what they called coyote time, where you have like a split second of time after you've run off of a ledge where you can still jump in midair. And so Madeline will still be out in midair, but she can still jump like she's on solid ground. And she doesn't start falling right away, but it's a split second. So you might not even notice it. Other things are like when you're gripping the side of a block that suddenly starts to move when you grip it. And if you jump at the right time while this block is moving, it will launch you further through the air than a regular jump would. And the game forces you to learn those mechanics and then use them to get through the level. Those are like the weird, interesting things that they do with physics that you kind of have to adapt to. And you wouldn't necessarily see until you actually start playing the game. And I really love that.
I will say, with the gameplay as well, there is there's a YouTube channel called Mix and Jam. And they did a video of recreating Celeste's movement. If you like the movement in this game, I highly recommend checking it out, because it just makes you appreciate it even more so. Yeah. Like, the devs have even like put the core code for how the movement works in this game online. They are very transparent with how everything works in this game. And really, it just only makes me love this game even more.
That is amazing. I didn't realize that they had put it out there. Cause like, yeah, I mean, there are very few, I would say, like S tier platformers. And when you remove any game with Mario in the title, that list shrinks even more.
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to the Sonic franchise.
Oh gosh. but I think that Celeste is like in contention for just simply the best platformer of all time. Like, it is so good. Like, just it feels so perfect.
It really does. And like, I'd be sitting there playing the game and my wife would be watching me, and I'd just be failing over and over and over. And every single time I would like sit back and be like, that was my fault. I knew what I did wrong. I need to get it right. Just one time, and I can do it. I can, and it never feels like it is the game's fault for your own failures. It is always just my own. So like, that's how good that it feels, like, because I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly what I'm doing wrong. And yet sometimes I just can't get it right.
Totally. It actually, I was playing the other night and I realized the satisfaction that Celeste gives you is kind of like not super dissimilar from the satisfaction that like actual climbing gives you. Like, it's, you sort of see the path, and once you figure it out, like, first you have to try a few different ways and figure out how you should approach it. But then once you figure out how to approach it, you may try over and over and over again to do the exact same set of movements and just like miss it by a tiny amount, and just keep trying and keep trying, and then like you get it and it's just like, oh my god.
Thank you.
So we have like this you know, baseline idea. Like we've described like how good this game is overall. What are some of your favorite levels, Griffin? How about you? Like what is your favorite level in the game?
My favorite level is the core.
Okay.
Technically it is a bonus level.
Yes.
Leading into the epilogue, it is not required to do, but it is the coolest mechanic to me in any of them, where you are adjusting this level between fire and ice, essentially. And you have these moments where you are powering through this section and, oh, you have fire rising from the bottom of the screen, and then you switch it over to ice by hitting whatever in the level. And now you have ice coming from the top of the screen. And you have these fun ways of playing with things and different mechanics like the little like electric balls that shoot you in a direction.
Yeah.
Come into play there. Different wall grabbing things come into play there. It is really, really unique within even just Celeste. But aside from that one, which I know not everyone who plays this game is going to play because the summit is technically the final level. For me, it's reflection. It's that level of climbing out of that pit of, no, I've regressed. I failed. I got to come to terms with myself on this. Otherwise, I'm never going to be able to complete this. I cannot keep fighting myself.
Yeah.
I think from both a gameplay and a narrative standpoint, which honestly, so much of this game, narrative and gameplay just go hand in hand. It is perfectly beautiful in the perfect like microcosm of why this game is amazing.
Yeah. David, what about you?
I think Reflection is also my favorite chapter. It's not only like just great to look at, like the orange sky and everything, and the music's great. It has I think my two favorite of the gimmicks of the whole game in the feathers and the angry blocks. And it has some of my favorite examples of sort of like tutorializing through gameplay. Like the way that it teaches you how to use the angry blocks in particular is so brilliant. Like the way that it explains to you how to like move them up and down is just, it's just one of those like perfect Mega Man moments of like of showing you without telling you. And also, like,
it doesn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I love is that it doesn't really tell you that you can do this. It just forces you to learn on your own that you have to do this. So, like, that first block that you get to, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't have any arrows on it to tell you, like, oh, push this or that. It's just that it moves in a direction directly into the spikes. And, you know, you have to push up or down to make it move, I think, or it was left or right to make it move. But that way you have to actually push something to make it move out of the way of the spikes. Otherwise, you're just going to keep running into the spikes over and over. So it forces you to have to experiment and try things. Try pushing a couple of the buttons, because like that's the way around getting past this obstacle and getting through the whole level itself.
Yeah, exactly. It's so good. And also the story stuff that happens in that chapter is amazing. Mm-hmm. Something that I think is really interesting about this chapter, and something that I've been trying to figure out, is so it's the only main chapter that has no standard strawberries. And I've just kind of been running it over in my head the last couple of days of like what that means thematically. And I don't have an answer. But I think it's intentional.
Yeah.
I mean, I would tell you thematically, it is, just speaking from experience with how this game relates to depression, is it genuinely takes everything you have to pull yourself out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes everything. There is no extra room. It is already challenging enough as is. And I think it just does a really good job of mirroring that in gameplay.
Yeah, I think also that the strawberries, that for reference for anyone who hasn't played Celeste, the strawberries are these extra challenge collectibles that you can go after in the stages, and you don't have to grab them to finish the game, but they're just optional challenge that you can get. And they don't add anything to the game. They don't boost your stats or whatever. They're just extra. And I feel like those kind of represent joy that Madeline is chasing. Like, she's chasing something that is there, and you know, it's optional for you. But it's just like, it is something that you can chase that will bring her joy. And in chapter 6, reflection of this game, where, you know, it's all about her pulling herself out of this pit. There is no joy in that pit. And that's why there aren't any strawberries for you to chase. Like, there's just complete sadness down there. And that's something where I feel like if there were strawberries down there, I would wonder, like, well, why are they down here? If they're not on the main path up this mountain, why would they be down here? Because she's not supposed to be down here. Or at least according to her, she's not supposed to be down here. But this is where her journey has taken her. And there shouldn't be pieces of joy down in this pit, because that's not what belongs here. But I don't know. It is very interpretive. That's how I see it. And I literally just started thinking that when you brought up there are no strawberries down there, and you're right, there aren't. And it's kind of a mystery because they don't explain that. That's fascinating, though. Reflection is a great chapter. Two other ones that I really loved were chapter 4, The Golden Ridge, where they introduce wind, and you have to use the wind to carry yourself further through the air on some jumps, or you have to jump into the wind, which really hampers your distance. So you just have to figure out how to deal with the wind. And then chapter 5, The Mirror Temple, I thought was really cool with how these platforms move when you dash. So you have sort of control over moving these platforms, and you have to figure out how to use the platforms to then launch you in the different directions or open up doors, in a sense, because, you know, these blocks will be blocking a hallway that you want to try and get into. And if you dash, it moves out of the way, but then it starts to go back to its original location. So you have to be really quick and tactical with how you're dashing and where. So I thought that one was really cool.
Yeah. One other thing I also want to shout out about Reflection is the boss fight.
Oh, yeah, totally cool.
Boss fights pop up, I think, like 2 or 3 times throughout this game. They're super rare. I remember the one in the resort, and then I remember the one with Battling. I forget if there's any more. But the fight against Battling is one of the coolest things to me in this game. And it makes for one of the hardest, in my opinion, B-sides in this damn game.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned B-sides. There's other extra stuff to collect and find here besides the strawberries. There's also cassette tapes, and those cassette tapes unlock extra challenge levels called the B-sides, or there's also C-sides. So these extra pieces of content are super challenging. Do you have any favorites of these?
They're all evil. They're all horribly evil, but I love them.
Yeah, they're so hard.
I love the Forsaken City B-side. Okay. I think it's a great introduction to what B-sides are, which are these significantly harder levels playing on the same gimmicks that you've already loved. Reflection, again, not to, you know, beat a dead horse there, but the Reflection B-side really is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the Celestial Resort one as well. Basically, the way these B-sides work is they take the same format of the original levels and put them in there. So you're going through all of the same puzzles you're going through in the initial level, just at a significantly higher difficulty. So you get through most of the Celestial Resort, and then you have a section of the Celestial Resort B-side that is the boss fight again. That is so much more difficult. It's so much more frustrating than the initial one. Like, I have over double the amount of deaths on the B-side of Celestial Resort than I do on the initial one. Like,
yeah,
it is genuinely that much more difficult, but it's so, so rewarding when you end that level and break the heart to end the B-side. It is so good.
It is. And like, it feels like they took the levels and just remixed specific portions of them and turned, and those are the B-sides and the C-sides, but they specifically did it in a way that amps up the difficulty to an extreme. And like, it, as impossible as the base game might feel sometimes, these extra challenge stages are incredible. And most of them I just watched on YouTube because I was like, no way. Like, I am not going to attempt that. Like, that's not for me. I'm just going to climb the mountain and be good. But
yeah, same. I leading up to this, I was, so I restarted because I haven't played in a couple of years. And in my head, I was like, okay, I'm going to go through, collect every strawberry, finish every seaside. I did neither of those things. I only was able to get through, I finished the Celestial Resort B-side. But that one got me so close to rage quitting. I was like, I need to, maybe I'll take, I do want to finish the others. But I did not finish them before today's recording.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I finished a couple of B-sides in the first level. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to jump in and try the C-side of stage one. And there's spikes everywhere. It doesn't look like there's anywhere you can land safely. And I tried it and got like three deaths in and was like, nope, like I know I'm not going to spend an hour doing this. So no,
this is that wonderful side of Celeste that is just terribly difficult.
Yeah.
Because this is also, if you complete the B side of Core, you unlock what are called golden strawberries.
Yes. Yes.
Which are, I have never gotten one of these. I don't think I ever will get one of these. But you could get a golden strawberry for completing a level without dying.
And I attempted the first stage for a golden strawberry and got, I think, 2/3 of the way through and then got, and then hit a death point. And I was, it sends you back to the very beginning of the stage. This is where it's not forgiving. And I was like, oh, right. I got a golden strawberry. Like, so I'm just going to skip that. I'm not going for it. Because if you grab that golden strawberry at the beginning of the stage, then it stays with you until you get killed and you get sent back to the beginning. So it would be nice if it just lets you continue going through the stage and you just lose the golden strawberry, but instead it just sends you back to the beginning. And it makes me not want to even attempt it. So
yeah, they really are very difficult and luckily completely superfluous and additional to everything else. You don't even need them to get the Platinum Trophy.
Oh, really? That's so nice.
Shout out to the Platinum Trophy. You don't have to collect every strawberry. You don't have to collect one of everything. You have to complete the game.
That's it. And it doesn't punish you for using the assist mode. So that's something else that I love about this game is that it has a very, very forgiving assist mode that lets you customize a lot of different factors of this. So you can change the number of dashes that Madeline has. You can change the game speed. So if you need some more time to like get through a tight spot, you can change that and give you more time. Excuse me, give you some more time. You can also just like tweak a few other things. I forget what other options I saw in there, but there's like a long list.
So the ones I really love are it's invincibility, and then I forget the name of the actual of what it is, but essentially there is a accessibility option that resets you like above a pit when you fall into it.
Yeah.
And like a little cloud appears and you get placed on that cloud. Like the accessibility in this really is great for anyone who wants to play it and is honestly been one of those accessibility modes, I think, that has done so much for the industry of people being able to go, look at this thing.
Yeah.
This is like the bare minimum we should be doing.
As well as just like like designing in certain things that help you play the game better. You know, like the fact that Madeline's hair will change color depending on whether or not she's already dashed in the air. So at the end of the game, like my wife was watching me play this, and during the credits, she just goes like, "Did you notice that her hair changes color?" And I was like, "Yeah, there's a reason for that. And that's to help you identify whether or not she has a dash left in her." And that way, like, it is just this tiny little piece of UI that is integrated into the game that makes it easier to play. So I feel like they really intended for everyone to experience this game, and you can somehow get through it and somehow find the right options that work for you to then engineer a game that works for you. And that's another way they show that this game really should be for everybody. You just have to understand how to make it your own. But one other thing I feel like has to be mentioned is the music. Somehow it's become famous.
Oh my God, yeah.
The gaming zeitgeist, where it is incredible. Composed by Lena Raine, and I think that was her name. But it is something that is just so heartfelt and at the same time so well composed for every single chapter. And it feels at times like it feels dire. It feels like exciting. It feels very contemplative and reflective. It's one of those things where I jump into and I listen to on occasion when I'm just working, or if I'm running, if I'm exercising on like a stationary bike, or like jogging on a treadmill, I have to listen to a few of these tracks just to get my motivation going. What are some of your favorite musical tracks in this game?
Yeah, I would say honestly, like the very sort of the core theme, like Madeline's sort of theme that plays, yeah. I think First Steps is the title track, or the title of the track rather. And then that like motifs of that appear throughout like the entire soundtrack. And it's so good. It's one of those like, mm-hmm. To me, at this point, it's one of those main game themes that is so immediately recognizable and so immediately just like put you back yeah. in a place, yeah. and you just imagine yourself on like that first snowy level. And then also on the opposite side, the Reach for the Summit, yeah. the song that plays during chapter 7, which is just such an incredible chapter in general, because it's such like a it's such a victory lap, because you know it's sort of Maddie has resolved a lot of her stuff, and then it's just mm-hmm. this like this triumphant climb, and the music is like simultaneously yes. so yes. sounds so victorious but still like dangerous, and it's mm-hmm. so rad. And then like Star Jump is a track that I throw on a lot. Like yeah, this really is one of those. yeah. I want yeah. to get this soundtrack on vinyl. Like, it's just so good.
I was also going to say Star Jump.
All right.
Star Jump is such yeah. a good track. And I do have both Celeste and then Celeste Farewell on vinyl.
Hell yeah.
One of my favorite records that I own. But I like Star Jump and then also Confronting Myself, I think, are a couple of the tracks in Reflection are really, really good. But I also really love the track from
yeah.
Madeline and Theo. There's a moment in this game where it's just Madeline and Theo talking. And it's very, very sweet and very, very good. And the music there is so much calmer compared to everything else in this game, but is still beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I loved the different movements that Reflection has. And there's one other that you guys haven't mentioned is from stage four, which is I think it's Golden. And Golden had the second half of that where they start sort of remixing it as you get further into the level. That one, it has just a really good beat. It feels like somewhat dangerous, but you know, it's not dire. But David, you brought up earlier Reach for the Summit. That one has to be my favorite. And it's because that one has it has sort of like this visual quality to it almost. Like it's an audio track. So yes, there's nothing you can see, but with what's happening with it, especially in the very beginning of the track, it almost like forces me to imagine what it is that's happening in the game at that moment, where she's rocketing straight up through the air on like this magic power that she has just discovered within herself. And it feels like it is out of control almost, but it's like borderline out of control. And she, after about 15 to 20 seconds of that, she comes resting onto a footbridge and then starts to run. And it's not a sprint, but it is a quick pace. And it still feels like something is dangerous. And then over the course of like the next few seconds, then like it continues and she continues to run a little bit faster. And she's got a swift pace going. And suddenly that's the background music that is going in the track. And then the front notes start to play and it has sort of this feeling of hope. And the music itself starts to tell you, you can do this. The way the final level starts in the game. And that's that, like you said, it's a victory lap, but it also feels a little bit dangerous. So it has this like sense of hope to it, but this feeling of like still like you're still like not out of, you're not at the top yet, but you're getting there, you're doing it, keep going. And then when it starts to progress through the level, it starts to integrate other parts of the other tracks from other stages into this track. And now it starts to remix itself with the other music from other stages. So it is almost like it is taking this victory lap throughout the entire game. And it's like throwing in the moving platforms from the temple. It's throwing in the wind from the Golden Ridge. It's throwing in parts of the hotel from, you know, the haunted hotel. So it's doing all these different things. And then the music just blends in perfectly with it. And then when you get through all of those, it gets to its main theme again, and it just has you climb. And this music continues, but you start to see those flags in the stage that start to count down from 30 and then 29, 28. And it shows you incremental progress, and the music just keeps going and it keeps repeating. But it just has this energy to it that makes me want to get up and run. So I love it. I can't gush about it enough. But yeah.
On that note, I also recommend, it just because it is music that not everybody will experience, looking into the music from Farewell. Farewell adds a whole like 40 minutes of extra music. And it is amazing. It bounces from like some of the early tracks, very much being this, like one of the early tracks is literally called Fear of the Unknown. And that is the exact vibe of like the opening part of this level, to get to one of the other later tracks called Beyond the Heart, and then eventually into Farewell. The music in the Farewell level is gorgeous and some of the best in the game. But it also, that's because it was all made, Farewell was tacked on at the end well after the initial release. So they know the powers of the initial game, what worked so well. And they were able to take that to add these additional like 10 tracks, or 13 actually, sorry. And they're just, to me, they are the best 13 tracks in the game. You have to listen to these. If you go on to something like Spotify, it's its own separate soundtrack, and it is just beautiful.
It's really great, yeah.
Brought up occasionally a couple of the characters that Madeline meets along the way. There's Theo, who is just a friend of hers that she meets on the mountain. There's Granny, who is someone who's living on the mountain that she occasionally runs into. There's Mr. Oshiro, who is in the haunted resort, and he's a ghost who still maintains the hotel. And then there's Dark Madeline, or as some people have coined her, Badeline. And Madeline runs into all of these characters as she's climbing the mountain, and they each kind of represent a different sort of aspect of her own mental health, where Theo is kind of like this friend of hers who recognizes that she's going through depression and anxiety. But she's, you know, he's accepting of who she is and is also ready to learn about her and ask questions. So in one of those campfire conversations that they have, he just casually asks, like, what is it like to have depression? And that moment is a beautiful thing. My wife and I were both like watching this happen. She just turned to me. She just goes, I feel so understood during this. And it was something so heartfelt to have this kind of thing talked about in a game. And it not only, you know, is reflected in the themes of the game and the way you're playing it, but in just to be talked about in a conversation.
I think what's special about these characters is like their representations definitely for different parts of Madeline, but they're also still going through their own things. Mm-hmm. A big part of the Mirror Temple is Theo dealing with his own vanity.
Yeah.
About social media and influencing and all of that. It's just something you don't expect in this game. And honestly, one of my favorite characters in this game is Granny.
Yeah.
Who is just been there, done that. Good luck, kid. But does genuinely care.
Yeah.
the way that they handle, I think, characters in this is so fun. And there is no villain to this story. It is ultimately everyone either supporting each other mm-hmm. or being on similar paths.
Yeah.
That just intersect at certain moments, but yeah. still are going in the same direction.
I love that there isn't a villain, like you were saying. And like, even, I mean, Mr. Oshiro ends up as a boss battle, essentially, at one point. But that doesn't, you know, make him a villain. And you, the way that Maddie does relate to all of them, it's just so beautiful.
It really is, because he's there in this hotel and he's alone and hasn't had anyone to talk to for a long time. So when Madeline shows up, he's so excited, but then he's also afraid that she's going to leave him. And that's why he lashes out toward her. So it's another form on display of sort of a form of not mental illness, but just an affliction of some sort, where he doesn't want to lose her, but also the way he reacts to that fear of losing her is not healthy. And she has to come to terms with that. I feel like, though, the one that we haven't talked about outright is Madeline. And this is a dark version of Madeline who gets brought out by the magic of the mountain itself. And she first is seen in chapter 2 when you walk in front of a mirror and you see this ghostly version of herself in the mirror. And then it comes out of the mirror and starts chasing her. The manifestation of Madeline herself is from the mountain, but it is something that has come from inside Madeline itself. And she reflects all of that anxiety and depression that Madeline has gone through. And this gives her the chance to actually talk to that darker self and learn, like, why does she exist? Why is she this way? Later on, during reflection, we actually get that conversation, and Madeline says, "I'm sorry, I was protecting you, and I didn't want to see you get hurt." And you know, we need to, you know, not endanger ourselves from, you know, the dangers of the world out there. So, I feel like that is one of the most true realizations of what depression can really be and how we look at it as being like this terrible thing and you know, something you can just ignore, which is fascinating that like at first Madeline says, like, "I'll just ignore her. Like I can ignore her. I can just think about this feather floating up and down, up and down." And then it's hilarious how Madeline shows up and cuts the feather in half.
Yeah.
And says that, like, you can't ignore me. Like, it's just going to get worse. And that is such a huge thing to actually see written, saying, like, you know, if you ignore depression, it's just going to get worse.
Absolutely. That is, to me, that is the part of the game that on this playthrough just hit me the hardest. Yeah. Was that beautiful bait and switch of, so, like, Maddie straight up saying, like, "I don't need you anymore." And I think that, like, I think that a less thoughtful game, a game that was not coming from such a personal place, might actually have that as a resolution for this character dichotomy.
Yeah.
But Madeline is like, "No, I am part of you." And that's the thing, right? Is that Maddie only has the strength to move forward once she fully embraces herself.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I think that is that moment, right, that makes this game special. It is, no other game I've seen acknowledge, no, it this isn't just something you overcome and it goes away. This is something that is always going to be a part of you. And you have to understand it.
Yeah.
you don't get to beat it. You have to understand it.
Yeah, it's not like at the end of Fight Club where the narrator just says to Tyler Durden, "I don't need you anymore," and you know he disappears or you know he shoots him. It's you know it's not that simple, and it's something that where Madeline has to realize like, oh, I do need this part of myself. This part of myself is useful, and I just have to figure out how to accept her and have her accept me in a sense. Like we need to figure out how to live together. And in doing so, they become even more powerful together. Madeline gets a second dash in the air. She has the ability to rocket up straight up into the next stage. And that's something that she couldn't do on her own. She has to accept herself and who she is. So when I wanted to talk about this, I wanted to ask both of you first, like, are you okay talking about how this related to you? Like, how did you identify a lot with the themes of depression and stuff in this game? I just am curious.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. So when I first played this game in like probably April, May of 2018, I had very recently started exhibiting signs of like an anxiety disorder. And I had not yet had a full-blown panic attack, but I had the, you know, lead-ups to it. And what's really wild is that I did start having actual panic attacks a little bit later. And this game straight up taught me the feather thing. Like that is a mm-hmm. visualization trick that is used by people, that is recommended by therapists. And it was this game that taught it to me and like probably helped me out of some like jams. And I mean, that is so remarkable, right? It's so wild. But then it's also like, this game covers so many topics of mental health and, you know, both anxiety and depression. And I think it's remarkable the way, like you were saying, Madeline later cuts the feather. And I think that is such a smart way to sort of talk about the way that, like, you know, you might be, if you struggle with multiple things, if you feel like you're on top of your anxiety, but then you have a bout of depression, and suddenly you're also not on top of your anxiety either, and you're dealing with both again. And the cycles of it, I think it's so brilliant that, like, you know, at the end of it, Madeline is in a good place, but I think it's so valuable that in Farewell, she's backslid. And having like the support still of everybody in that time, even though she has once again distanced herself as a result of her mental health, it's just so honest, you know?
Yeah.
There's a great moment at the beginning of Farewell where Madeline, which is such a hilarious name for a character who is like definitively not bad. but like, there's a moment where she's like, "I can't follow you on this."
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's some of the most real stuff for this. Like, I am someone who does deal with depression, and that is a very much a core part of who I am now. And long and short of it, it sucks. But I think stuff like this game, not only has it been able to be something where I feel seen, but for me, it's also been something where I'm like, to explain to people how it really feels. Sometimes yeah. I don't have the words for it, and I have pointed people to this game where I'm like, hey, I know you like video games. play this and get back to me. Because genuinely, I think it explains so many of those feelings so well. Even in the moments of, like, one of the big ones for me is the Celestial Resort, with the weirdness there of, no, I'm going to push my stuff down and help somebody else because that's what's going to make me feel better in this moment.
Yeah.
Is just ignoring my stuff and worrying about somebody else's. Like, it really hits all of the major parts that I have felt throughout my life with this in a way that just does not happen.
Yeah. Portrayals of mental health in media can be really tricky because, like, you know, like, depression can definitely feel a little bit different from one person to the next. And I have a friend who played this, and they had felt sort of not seen in the portrayal of depression, where they had been seen by other things that I didn't feel seen in. And I think it's just a really good example of how, like, everybody's journey is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I do think that this game hits so many different sort of topics from chapter to chapter and from character to character that I think, like, I think it's hard to imagine not seeing yourself in this game at all, right? Or not seeing a friend in this game.
Yeah, I think even if you don't deal with anxiety and depression, or even if you don't know someone who deals with anxiety and depression, which in this world at the moment is extremely impressive.
Yeah.
Like, you will still see each other in this game.
Yeah.
You will see it in those little moments of connection between the characters. You'll see it in a common struggle for these characters. Like, this game is so innately human. And that, I think, is the core of this game.
And as heartfelt as we make it sound, it's just two pixelated people on screen, and they're just talking, and the sound of their voices is just gibberish, and you know, it sounds like something you know, on a very old game, but it is still, like, one of the best things to just sit there and read for an hour and like listen to them talk. And sometimes the writing is so just, like, fun and silly, where, like, Theo talks about how he's from a long distance land called Seattle. And you know, he's just, like, casually there just to have fun, and he wants to make sure that Madeline is there to have fun too, or he wants to, like, share his joy of just, like, posting selfies or like, you know, sharing this with the rest of the world. And sure, like, he's really into social media, but he does find joy in it, and he wants to share that. And I feel like that is another theme of this game, where I just want to share how good this is and what this game has done for other people. So there, that's where I see myself in this game in some factors. In other factors, I see myself in just the challenge, and going back to that insurmountable feat is something that is possible, but, you know, it just seems impossible when you look at the bigger picture. When you look at just the single step that you need to take, then it does feel possible. And that's where little things add up over time. So there's so many factors here. There's so much that you can get out of this. I also kind of, I like to ask, as sort of a recommendation, who should try out Celeste?
Genuinely, everybody. I don't think that there is one. Obviously, you know, if you like platformers, you've never played this game, what are you doing? like this, like we said earlier, like, this might be one of the best platformers. No, to me, this is not only the best platformer ever, but to me is one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
This is, like, I genuinely keep a list, and this is number three. This is such a special, unique game that everybody should give it a shot. the accessibility options genuinely make it so anybody can play this game.
Yeah.
And you will still see that difficulty and that struggle depending on your ability to play games. This isn't, this is a very difficult game, yes, but this isn't a Souls-like. This isn't a game that is aggressively difficult for the sake of difficulty. This game is difficult for the sake of the story.
Yeah. It's funny, you brought up the accessibility options again. I did have my wife sit down and play the prologue, at least, and then a few screens of the first chapter. And she was incredibly frustrated by it. But also, like, she doesn't play games. And so she has a much harder time just reading what it is that she should do, remembering what buttons do what. And I had forgotten at the time about the accessibility options. So definitely, like, if you're at all curious about this and you don't play games or you might not like platformers, check out the accessibility, because there is no shame in like easing down whatever difficult portions there are in this game. I admit, like, I didn't finish the core stage without the accessibility options the first time. I decided to myself, like, this time I'm going to finish the core without the accessibility. And it was hard, but I can't believe I did it. Farewell. No, I couldn't do farewell without the accessibility, but like I was able to finish the heart of the mountain or the core with the, just the standard settings. And I'm pretty proud of that one. But David, who do you think should play Celeste? Do you have any other recommendations for this game?
Yeah, I mean, I would just completely mirror that. Like, the accessibility options being so generous and, like, really standing in juxtaposition with the Souls games. Like, there was that whole controversy a couple years ago with Sekiro about, you know, people were like, can we have accessibility options? And they were like, no. And, you know, that's one way to approach it. But this game, it really welcomes everybody in and doesn't punish anybody for wanting to take it a little bit easier. And just in terms of, like, stories and experiences that should be experienced, like, if you like games, you should play this. Like, I have sort of a gripe with a lot of like indie games sort of in this milieu that are very heartfelt but, like, not fun to play at all. Like, there, and that's fine if it's like a couple hours long, but there are some games that really do have something to say and have a story to tell, but they're, like, not fun for 12 hours. And it's just like, don't do that. Like, take something out, make something more fun. This game is, again, like, perfect. Like, it is so fun to play. It is so beautiful to hear. So beautiful to see. Like, it's, and if you are having so much trouble getting through, just give yourself, like, unlimited dashes, and there's so much still to experience. Yeah.
I will admit, when you mentioned how fun it is to play, like, I still, to this day, as much as I've played it, like, I've played through it like 5 times. And even now, on those moments where I get killed trying to dash somewhere or, like, dashing directly into spikes, I found myself laughing really hard at myself. And, like, that is the amount of fun that this failure also exhibits, where, like, I know what I'm doing wrong, and I can't believe I just did that to myself. I got to try again. But, like, that last one was so close, and it was hilarious how, like, I just dashed, like, right at the wrong time, or I was there, and I accidentally got nervous and made a big mistake. One of my favorites was when it was during the Golden Ridge stage, and as you get closer and closer to the end, the danger starts to ramp up and the wind starts to whip in your face, and then snowballs start to fly through the air. And I got all the way to the far right side of the screen, almost got to the next screen, and a snowball just smacked me right in the face. and I had to start over. And I laughed so hard at that. And Carrie, my wife, was right next to me. She's like, what? I said, right in the face, just so close. But I love how this game just says like, oh, it's okay. Like, you can do it. Just try again. And it's really quick. So again, like, it doesn't feel terrible to fail because it's so forgiving. And it's okay if you want to take this challenge on, but you know, if you want to take some easier pathways to it, that's fine too. That's all about like the theme about climbing itself. It's like, you know, you could take the hard way or you could take the easy way. It's up to you. And whatever way works for you is the best way to go about doing it.
And it's okay to ask for help, essentially, right? Like if you can't get through this on your own, there's absolutely no shame in having a helping hand.
It's beautiful. Actual books and more recommendations of this book club style podcast. Is there anything that you are reading, watching, or playing right now that you'd want to recommend? David, how about you?
Yeah. So I, over the last little bit, my gaming habits have gone quite retro. I finally, after years of hemming and hawing, picked up one of the little like emulator handheld Game Boy guys.
Ooh.
Specifically the Miu Mini Plus. And it's so, I mean, it's fantastic. Like it feels the button. I have like very specific wants and desires with D-pads and with the clickiness of a button at all. It feels great. And so I've really been, I've been loving that. But I, in the past, you know, I've pretty much been messing with emulators as long as I've been gaming. Like that's the reason I even have like sort of a broad understanding of like the Super Nintendo, Nintendo era is because my older brothers were emulating on our like Windows 95 computer. So I've never not emulated. But the problem with emulation is that as soon as you open that box, you have like 8,000 good video games to play.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that the truth?
So with when I got this thing, I made a really conscious decision. I was like, I'm going to keep like 5 games on this thing tops so that I actually like explore them and you know, get to really get in there. And so the 2 games I've really been playing most kind of actually both relate to Celeste in different ways. The first is Little Nemo, the Dream Master for NES, which has always been one of my favorite games.
Oh.
It's based on a weird anime movie, which is based off of a weird like early 20th century newspaper comic.
Yeah, I love the movie, by the way.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so fun. And the game is it's a Capcom. It's from that really good era of like licensed Capcom games, like came out probably within a year of DuckTales. It has one of my favorite soundtracks, but it's also one of the most player hostile games I've ever like. It hates you, like it wants you dead so badly. There are some of the platforming challenges and the way that the enemies attack you is just it like sucks in a good way. There's a level where you're like on top of a train and there's like straight up like RNG as to like when the things that you're supposed to dodge come.
Oh no.
But what's really fun about the using this handheld is that I've recently discovered the emulator RetroArch Which I've never used. There's so many out there, right? But what I didn't realize is that RetroArch has achievements built in.
Oh.
And so, and it's so fun to approach old games that you have always loved with new challenges, and especially that, you know, being old games, clearly, you know, like the NES wasn't going to have achievements. So I'm trying to like, you know, 100% Little Nemo on, and there's two tiers of achievements. You can either have it with, where you have like save states and stuff, and you know, the usual emulation goodness, or you can play hardcore mode and have no save states, have no rewind and nothing like that. I'm trying to get that list. And it's really tough, but it's fun to go back to. And then the other game I've been playing, I'm playing Mother 3 for the first time, which sort of fulfills the other half of Celeste in that it is, will make you cry.
Yeah.
And it has unbelievable pixel art. Like it is some of the most beautiful pixel art I've ever seen. And I would argue like some of the, maybe the best like acting of pixel art, if that makes sense. Like the way that the characters are animated to show emotion. Like there's so many scenes that they don't actually use dialogue to portray what the characters are feeling and going through. And it's so impactful. Like it's so good. Mm-hmm. Obviously emulation is probably the only way that anybody's ever going to play this game unless Nintendo makes a huge life change. But it's so worth it. And like the fan translation is so good. And you can very easily find the ROM that is already patched with the translation, so you don't have to go through the whole the process of doing it yourself and patching the ROM. And then the other thing I've been really into lately is so Netflix recently remade the anime Ranma One Half, or started it. They have one season up, and it was, I loved it so much that I have gone back and started reading the manga.
Oh.
And it's so good. It's so funny. It's very, very, very weird, and kind of crass, but it's if you like that very late 80s, early 90s anime aesthetic, mm-hmm. Highly recommend. And if you want something that is just completely off the wall, it's so fun.
Okay. What was it called?
Ranma One Half.
Okay. Ranma One Half. All right. I'll check that one out.
It's the same creator as Inuyasha.
Okay. Okay. We recently in our house just started watching a couple of the Studio Ghibli movies. My wife had never seen any of them, and I'd only seen a couple, and neither one of us had seen Spirited Away. So we started with that one. And yes, we sat down and watched that, and we're both just kind of like looked at each other like, what is going on? And I had to say to her, look, like, you just have to watch and absorb it. Neither one of us are going to have answers for questions. So just watch. That's it. And yeah, it's beautiful. And we've started exploring a couple of other anime options, which, and this reminds me, I need to get the next one from the library that is on our list. But yeah, Griffin, what are you playing or watching, reading right now that you'd like to recommend?
Got a couple things at the moment. Much more modern stuff for me. At the moment right now, I am playing through Wonderstop. Wonderstop currently available on all platforms.
Okay.
The developers of the game are Ivy Road, who folks may know being run by Davey Reedon, who did the Stanley Parable. It's this fantastic game about burnout.
Oh, interesting.
Essentially, you are playing as a fighter who has lost their mojo to the point where they can no longer hold their sword. And they are stuck at this tea house in the middle of an enchanted forest.
Oh, I remember seeing a trailer for this. Yes.
It is heartbreaking in all the best ways.
Okay.
It is genuinely, like, the writing is so good. The characters are so fun and sometimes hilarious, sometimes agonizing, sometimes depressing. Like, genuinely, it is such a good game in illustrating all these different types of people and also how other people respond to your own burnout.
Yeah.
You know, you got everything from the supportive people to non-supportive to, oh, you're just going to be able to push through it. You've got this. Like, you know, the people who are trying to support but don't know how to do it the right way.
Yeah.
It is genuinely, like, hits you from all angles on this in what is probably going to be one of my favorite games of the year.
Okay.
It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say it looks very fascinating. And, you know, it was one of those that I was very curious about because it looked like a cozy game, but I knew that, like, deep down there was something else going on where you're not just going to be there making tea for everybody.
So gameplay wise, it is just making tea. That is my only like note for people. Like, if you are not into cozy style gameplay, You're probably not going to love this game. Just because that is the entirety of the gameplay is making tea, cleaning up the area, planting seeds to get new ingredients for said tea, mm-hmm. and then conversations with people.
Yeah.
It's just done in such a unique way that, yeah, there is so much more going on in the actual story of the game. And unlike a lot of these, unlike a lot of, you know, farming sims, which we have a lot of right now, there is a definitive endpoint to this game.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. David, you mentioned earlier, one of the two of you, I don't remember which of you, sorry, but one of the two of you mentioned earlier that there are indie games out there that they're not as good gameplay wise, but they do have great stories. Are there any games out there that are at that caliber of Celeste that you'd recommend that feel great to play or are fun to play and at the same time have excellent writing or some sort of story that should be experienced?
I would say I really highly recommend A Short Hike. Okay. It is both really mechanically satisfying and short. It's one of those like single sitting type of games. Mm-hmm. That is just, it's so pretty. It has such an interesting like low poly aesthetic that almost looks like maybe like a DS game. And it's so pretty and it's so cute. And it has just really great. It's sort of if you took the loop of like Breath of the Wild of just trying to get enough stamina to climb higher and higher, that is sort of the mechanic of the game. And it's very pleasant.
Yeah, along that line, I would also recommend Coffee Talk and in that similar vein, Valhalla. Where these two games are very gameplay light. They are much more visual novels, and rather than you are designing drinks rather than like actually actively exploring. Coffee Talk, you are a barista. And then Valhalla, you are a bartender. But the drinks that you make for different people can have a very large impact on the actual story itself and the way that different characters interact. Another one that is also kind of more narrative heavy, but has a very fun gameplay mechanic is Citizen Sleeper. There's Citizen Sleeper and then Citizen Sleeper 2 came out this year. I would recommend either or both are fantastic. Citizen Sleeper 1 is definitely a much better entry into the universe because it explains a lot of stuff that doesn't get explained in 2. But it has this fantastic dice system where you are still random. You get like 6 dice every day. That are rolled at the top of the day. And through those, that determines the odds of being able to successfully complete stuff. So like a six on your on a d6 is like you're going to complete this at the best possibility, whereas like a one is you have a 50% chance of this going terribly and a 50% chance of this going so-so. So there's a really fun dice mechanic into the totality of the game, where in general it is very much about resource management and figuring out how to survive in this world, and also just tells a fantastic story on top of that. The writing in Citizen Sleeper is amazing.
Yeah, I've had that recommended to me by a few other people. So, and Citizen Sleeper and Coffee Talk are both on PlayStation Plus Extra. So we might be talking about those games coming up at some point. Both are of a high interest to me. So yeah, maybe we should have either one of you back to talk about those games. But I've got a few recommendations of my own. The first is a book related to this topic of understanding yourself and those emotions that are sometimes harder to face. It's called Night Vision by Mariana Alessandri. She's a philosophy professor who's written about embracing and accepting those darker moods that we all have, like grief and depression, and accepting them as part of who we are, not denying them or insisting that they are just problems that need to be fixed. Again, that's Night Vision by Mariana Alessandri. Very insightful. The other recommendation I have is next month's game, which is going to be Untitled Goose Game. We are going to be running around being a very annoying little goose, ruining everyone's day. This game was previously in the vote for what game we are going to be playing in March, and it tied with Journey to the Savage Planet, which we did talk about. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, let's keep this one in on the back burner because we should revisit it at some point. And I did get a couple of people reaching out to me saying that they did want to talk about this on the show. So we are going to give it a shot and jump in and try it out. So I'm looking forward to this one because I heard a lot about it, never tried it, and showed my wife, and she said that like it looks very annoying and we're gonna have some fun.
It's great because it is annoying, but you're the one being annoying. You don't get that opportunity. That
the game is chaos incarnate. It's so fun.
It's so funny. A controversial game of the year at the 2020 Dice Awards. a big upset, but I'm not mad at it.
It's one of those games. It's like when you understand that, you know, like it winning at Dice is like it's all developers voting on it.
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes you just want to be an annoying goose.
It's going to be fun. I know it's going to have some sort of fun to it. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too. Remember that you can be part of the show by writing in to psplusgameclub@gmail.com or going to the Trophy Talk Network Discord to share your thoughts about the Untitled Goose Game. You can also use that Discord to recommend future games that you'd like to hear talk about on future episodes. And you can find me on Discord at the Portland Kevin if that's how you'd like to contact the show. Also, I'd like to give you both one more chance to talk about your stuff. David, remind us, what is the Mondays and where can we see it?
Yeah, so check us out on Instagram at the Mondays Improv. And if you live in the greater Portland area, we have shows every once in a while, and they are super fun and weird.
Okay, great. And then Griffin, remind us, D+S, when does that usually go up?
Yeah, D+S, normal episodes go up every Tuesday. We try to do every other Tuesday. And weekly episodes go up sporadically, depending on when shows are active. Go ahead and just follow us on YouTube, D+S, that's the actual plus sign, and then us as another word, for anything and all things Disney.
Yeah, yeah. And what are you guys talking about recently?
We just wrapped up a three-episode series on the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy.
Oh, cool.
And we are currently planning now to go into some new stuff. We are backtracking a little bit because of the wonderful timing of things. So we're talking about Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man next. I think we're also going to be having an episode potentially about the new Snow White movie. We've got plenty to talk about right now.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, again, remember, you can be part of the show by finding our Discord and talking with us there. Griffin and David, thank you so much for talking about Celeste with me. This has been a great episode. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Good timing, David.
In tandem. Thank you. And to anyone listening, thank you so much for listening. I hope that with anything you're facing, that you remember, just like at the beginning of Celeste, you can do this.